Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about true people's liberation movements and revolution. I'm your host, Raven. I use she, her pronouns, and I am coming to you live from Central New York. Today, we hopefully are going to talk a little bit about the continued and ever-present genocide, which is happening throughout Gaza, spreading, of course, into the surrounding regions. We have different nations, different resistance groups within Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and elsewhere, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait. I threw Afghanistan out there. I actually don't think that's true. But anyways, this resistance is intensifying and continuing over 170 days in to this live-streamed mass extermination event. And I want to get into this a little bit, but before I do so, I want to just mention that, of course, it is the holy month of Ramadan. It has been very difficult for me these last few weeks, continuously more and more difficult to post really anything, because ultimately it feels in this moment that my voice is probably one of the least important and least necessary, that you need to be focusing on hearing from. This is certainly a moment where I myself am really trying to learn and really trying to grow. And also, this is, of course, the Palestinians' moment, the Yemenis' moment, the Lebanese moment, the moment of Asia, Africa, and the Americas, because as we've spoken about in past episodes, this genocide which is happening in Gaza, right, cannot be disconnected from the multiple ongoing genocides throughout the world, the historical occurrences of genocide previously, and on top of this, we must also see that genocide is, and mass extermination is, an extreme, but it is not different or separate from starvation and hunger, which is a general reality for a majority of the world's population. Police violence, military occupation, the lack of health care, the lack of education, the lack of housing, the lack of meaningful, well-paid jobs. All of these things are a part of genocide, right? But this mass extermination that you're seeing live on television, this is just an extreme. We know the spirit of Mandela in connection to the 100-plus-year historical attempt by William Patterson and Paul Robeson and W.E.B. Du Bois to take a petition to the United Nations to get them to charge the U.S. with genocide. Spirit of Mandela with its international tribunal in 2021 did just that. In the Malcolm X Shabazz, Al-Haj Malik El-Shabazz Center, which, of course, it was just recently the anniversary of El-Haj's that is Malcolm X's assassination. And for folks who don't know, his daughter, Ilyasa, and others are suing the NYPD, the FBI, and the CIA for the withholding of evidence. And others who were charged with the assassination had, after decades, been finally exonerated in 2021, in which the New York District Attorney was forced to admit that these groups, the CIA, the FBI, the NYPD, had withheld evidence and helped to concoct false testimonies, false witnesses. So, anyways, all this to say that genocide, war, extermination, these are constants. And like I said, I've been really having a hard time hitting record, because every time I finish recording an episode, I just feel like everything I just said is, you know, not necessarily remarkable and not really worth posting. And that's because, in the final conclusion, very little has changed in the last 500 years. But in the last few months, a lot has began or really intensified and heightened in its changing, its shifting, its dialectical interaction, the two interrelated but contradictory sides, the oppressor and the oppressed, the poor and the rich, the landlords and the tenants, the workers and the owners, all of these relationships constantly ebbing and flowing here. And you start to develop a heightening of these contradictions, and that is ultimately what led to the all-out resistance, the armed resistance, throughout the years of Zionist occupation. And it has been what has led to armed resistance around the world. That is continued forms of oppression, but also continued and renewed forms of resistance met with, of course, attempts at repression. And on, so on and so forth, rinse and repeat. As this cycle continues, and as those contradictions are heightening, it is leading to a scale of extermination, which of course has never been accomplishable or has never been accomplished before, to the scale with which we are seeing around the world today, not just in Palestine. And of course, this has made it really hard to record, because what do you say? What do you say live on air, right, that you can get away with in this moment? It's almost impossible to put forward, you know, a solid program, because a lot of the things which are necessary in this moment, many of us are not, including myself, willing to take the risks and, you know, commit the sacrifices for. On top of this, in many ways, we're not always just necessarily, you know, generally out-organized, but really what we are organizing towards is certainly being outmaneuvered. What I mean by this is basically the point that was put forward by Diallo on the Black Power Media episode the other day. Are we being out-organized? I can't remember the full title of the episode, but y'all can check that out. Diallo says, he's like, you can, even the most well-put-together vehicle, he says, won't take you in the right direction Anyways, the point he was saying is that, you know, the most well-built vehicle won't get you where you're going if you're not on the right path. There we are. That's what it was. So, we have a lot of people who are very good at doing what they do. We have a lot of organizations which are out here which have very successfully continued to organize and continue to gain members for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years sometimes. And yet, materially and politically, many of the questions remain the same. They have adapted a bit, you know, the questions, they take on new complications, new contradictions as time moves forward. But the question remains, questions really remain, who's in power? How'd they get there? Why are they doing what they are doing? How does it benefit them? How do we stop them? And how do we succeed in doing so? These are questions that a podcast can't really sort out. Because in my experience, especially in a localized kind of focus, it takes physical steps like actions, going out and doing social investigation, surveying, talking to your neighbors, talking to people outside the soup kitchen, talking to people on the corners, talking to people at your job, talking to your co-students, talking to people at your church, at your mosque, at your temple, and trying to get a sense of what their kind of political consciousness is, but also what their tangible needs are, what some of their demands are. And from this, of course, you start to develop a bit of a platform or a program or some kind of steps, you know, some kind of list of demands or things needed, which then, you know, your group, as you develop over time, whatever your group looks like, can then make their objectives and sort through how to kind of approach them as a group. I have my own ideas, my own answers for how we should be going about these things, but ultimately, you know, I think the real issue is how to get people involved, how to get ourselves to stay involved consistently, how not to drop out, how not to burn out, how not to get arrested, you know, all these different things. Some of these things are very difficult to deal with on a podcast as well, because really I'm just one person. You know, a lot of these ideas, a lot of these questions, a lot of these attempts at an answer come from discussions, lessons, experiences of others, which I've been very, you know, grateful and lucky to be able to have. But really, you know, who's putting together the podcast, who's posting it, who faces any backlash or anything like that if I speak out of turn, say something wrong, or whatever, is me. So I'm also cautious about what I say now as much as I can be, because, you know, we're also at a stage where, for example, right, we've been seeing about the National Guard and more police being deployed to the subways under the context of preventing certain forms of violence, under the context of preventing fare hoppers, under the context of preventing all sorts of things. We know the state, meaning, of course, taking nothing for granted here, that, you know, nobody knows everything, and not everybody knows everything. That the state, what I mean when I say this is, the historical development which has led to an organized monopoly over power, specifically over violence and control. So this would mean the bureaucratic institutions of the state, the government, the politicians, the busybodies, the secretaries, all those folks, right? The special armed wings, meaning the military, the National Guard, the police forces, the intelligence agencies as well. But also the news agencies, the media services, right? The educational institutions, the healthcare institutions, the housing conditions. All of this is a part of how the state operates and tied to the state apparatus. So, when we talk about what problems we're facing, right? The hyper-militarization of the state, in the example as I gave, right? The going into the subways, but also the cop cities, right? That are popping up all over the place. We know that this year there's already been significant heightening in police killings. We know there is an increase in poverty and inequality. We know there is an increase in homelessness. We know there is an increase in hunger and childhood malnutrition, not only just here, but around the world. So, in this moment, in this period, as violence and militarization of the state, the tightening grip is continuing, we have to know who our audience is, and we also have to know what their goals are. We know not everybody who listens to this program, not everybody who attends Zoom meetings, not everyone who joins organizations are there because they care about changing the world. Some of them are there to infiltrate, some of them are to get information, some of them are there to try to arrest or to try to harm people, to try to destabilize movements, destabilize organizations, destabilize people. So we are heavily conscious of this. We're also heavily conscious of the fact that at the end of the day, this podcast serves as a medium of political education primarily, in that political education comes from, first of all, action. That political education without praxis is nothing. And that practice without political education is incorrect, illogical, and often ineffective. So the two tie together in a beautiful symbiosis, in a dialectical give and take relationship. But again, it's not so easy to just go out and do shit. And it's also not intelligent or smart to broadcast everything that we're doing out here, you know? We need to be more cautious about where we're putting our faces, where we're putting our names, what we're tying ourselves to, what organizations we're a part of, what they're doing with our information, with our dues, right? All of this is important, too, because we constantly here join an organization. I've constantly made a call, join an organization. But we know that not every organization is made the same. So leaving this point aside, ultimately my overall point is recording in this moment has been difficult because I'm not really attached to anything that's given me the direct kind of layout, the program, and also the support and the backing up to go on and really talk deeper into detail about some of these things. But also on top of that, just because a lot of what is necessary hasn't really changed. And a lot of what I've talked about before has covered some of these topics. So, you know, hopping on and repeating the same over and over and over and over and over again, I'm sure it gets old for some people. I know it gets old for myself. So, you know, really it's just, it's this question of burnout, right? How do we deal with this burnout? How do we deal with this disorganization in our lives? You know, a lot of our lives are not so regimented in a way that would be more like make it easier to organize, make it easier to go out and do shit. A lot of us work on the weekends, a lot of us work nighttime, a lot of us work multiple jobs, a lot of us work overnight. So it's hard, you know, we're exhausted, and not only this, but the type of work that we do today, this is very crucial. This is something that I think we haven't dealt with in enough depth. The type of work we're doing today is very different than the work that was being done at the time of, say, the Russian Revolution, the work that was being done at the time of the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban Revolution. It's far less socialized. It's very segmented now. You have a separation or a division of labor that has never been more multiplied, I think. And that could be wrong, but it seems that way. What I mean is that for every one product that you sell, right, there are countless individuals who will interact with that product. But likely, the majority of them do not reside under the same building. The majority of them do not work the same job, and the majority of these products will not be started and finished by the same few individuals, but will be transported in between each stage, started, kind of fixed together, and then finished, packaged, and then sold in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different places. So, because of this, organizing at your workplace is really hard. You know, you think of the fast food joints, you think of the gig economy, you think of Lowe's, you think of Walmart, you think of Big Lots, you think of Dollar General. Even think of the post office today, or schools and places where you would typically have unions. Even thinking of, like, trades, you know, and the union jobs that exist now. These unions, these are not radical unions, these are not revolutionary unions, these are not socialist unions, these are not unions which are calling for an abolition of the state, these are not unions which are calling for the ownership of the means of production in the hands of the people, these are not unions which are calling for a break from capitalism, these are unions which are pro-capitalist and in many cases pro-American capitalists. So, all of this to say that it's a bleak situation out there for anyone, and trying to come up with answers is hard. And because I have had such a stagnant form of interaction with my podcast, meaning that kind of the same amount of people listen to it, but don't really interact, don't really say anything, don't really share anything, don't really, you know, message me and talk about nothing with me. There are a few of yous, and I really do appreciate you because it means the world to me. I can't tell you what it means to... I got a message the other day from a comrade of mine. Shout out Comrade Libre, who's been on the program multiple times before, who said that a comrade of theirs in Kenya sent them my podcast. Now, my expectation is that there is a chance that that comrade is Booker Omale, who is with the Communist Party of Kenya, who came on the podcast. And if that's the case, awesome. If that's not the case, even more awesome, because that means someone in Kenya found my podcast and they reached out to a friend of a friend, said they liked it, and they were able to say, I know her. That's my friend Raven. So that was cool to hear about, and it's cool when folks reach out to me. You know, shouts out to those of you who do. But I also know that it is hard. It's hard to know what to say. It's hard to know how and where and what and who and when to say it. It's hard to know what context to bring things up in. It's hard to know who to trust. It's just, it's hard. And I think really for me, what I want to try to continue doing is being someone both organizationally and individually who folks feel comfortable reaching out to, folks feel comfortable opening up dialogue and discussion with, even if we don't come to conclusive answers on something, just to be able to work through these questions. And that's really what the podcast has been, and I try to make it about. I try to make it more about action, developing historical analysis, but all of this is quite difficult when I myself, of course, work a 40-hour-a-week job. I'm a member of multiple organizations myself. I have a lovely, committed relationship with someone of almost 10 years. And, you know, I got a car to keep up. I got a body that I need to start maintaining. And I have a lot more that I want to do before that body and this heart give out. So as we kind of come to a close, I don't know what really the main point of this episode is. I don't really know what the title will be, but I do know that at the end of every episode, what I really want to get across to people and what I hope people will understand is, first of all, that we each, as individuals, are very powerful, but not powerful enough to take down a system. However, when we combine together, and not just come together in a room and say, okay, we're together, but really come together, sort out our differences, honestly, squarely, deal with what are our differences. How do we deal with that, right? But also come together in action and sort out these conclusions, sort out these answers through practice, through experimentation. The second point I want to leave you with is that no one is coming to save us. The U.S. government, the European Union, the United Nations, all of these institutions are built by and for the colonizing class. Therefore, these laws, these systems, these jobs, these environments, these relationships, none of it serves us. None of it benefits us. It benefits those in power, in control, who exploit and benefit from this system the majority of the world and their wealth and their labor. The last point I want to leave you with is that everyone has a role. Everyone has a responsibility. Everyone has a duty. But not everybody's the same. And not everybody can meet the same criteria, meet the same capacity, check off the same checklists as everybody else. So let us not organize in the same way that we work or educate ourselves under capitalism competitively. But let us organize to build a revolutionary unity, which is alive, which does not ignore contradictions within itself, between itself and others, between others and themselves. And let us not ignore the fact that we are here today with air in our lungs, blood in our veins, oxygen in our brains, and a beating heart for now. And that is not a guarantee for the coming moments. So do not waste. Do not regret. Do not wish. I regret, I wish, I miss out, I forget, I make mistakes all the time. And it is one of the things which I'm trying to challenge myself about the most. But again, we can only do as much as we have at our disposal to do. So if and when you or anybody else can or cannot do what you want or what others expect you to do, the only real question you should be asking yourself is, can I and should I be doing more? And if so, then wherever you can, wherever I can, I need to, you need to, we need to start doing. If you have to start small, but you have to start somewhere. Don't just do something for the sake of doing anything. Look at history, do some study, do some research, talk to people around you, talk to organizations, and then move. And remember that we have a real situation on our hands. We must free all political prisoners. We must free the land. And we must free Palestine. Long live the revolution. All power to the people.